So we're going to just jump right into it. I'm Pat Roos. I'm a policy advisor for the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And my friend here, David Lee, whose pocket just rang, he has to catch a plane, and he is from Calcasa, and he and his colleague, Lisa Park, are from the California Partnership, NDV. And we're going to talk about, we're going to use teen dating violence as an example of how we can then start a community, state, and national advocacy. Congresswoman Marvel always said most of it, so we're just going to remind you and emphasize it. So, pop up.
Okay, great. I just need now, because we live in the electronic age, I need someone to just take a picture of me to prep proof that I was speaking here.
Oh, wow.
So, now as the technology is, I will now keep the picture. For those of you who know me, know that here's we just push this button, and got the piece over my background, and now it looks like I'm speaking,
right?
Okay, so now we have proof that it is the evidence.
Did it come out?
Beautiful. Let's see if it came out, and that's the... It did. So great. So thank you. So I'm David Lee, and we had carefully constructed a beautiful order, and I was going to go near the end, and I was going to follow up on my... I'm with the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and we are the sister coalition with the California Partnership Against Domestic Violence, and we were going to... I was going to follow Lisa's comments, but I need to run. So what I want to talk about very briefly is to really think about teen dating violence as an important issue that has become a topic. And it's become sort of the topic du jour and is getting a lot more attention. And certainly that came from the work that went in DiBalwa 2005, to be able to put teen dating violence in there and start putting it on the agenda. And now, several years later, we're starting to see it percolate and we're starting to see attention. And that being February, moving from Teen Dating Violence Awareness Week to Teen Dating Violence Awareness and Prevention Month, and I don't know where we go next for a whole quarter or something, but it's a way that we're seeing it's evolving. And what I want, the point I want to do is two points. The first point is to recognize that teen dating violence is a great opportunity to look across many different areas, and that we need to be able to look at ways that from coming from the sexual assault field, that we recognize that teen dating violence involves sexual assault. And indeed, in a lot of the teen dating violence, in the sexual assault prevention work, is indeed the same as teen dating violence prevention work. And so we need to be able to work together and be coordinated in doing this. And this is a great opportunity for domestic violence and sexual assault and others who are dealing with relationship issues and adolescence issues to be able to work together. And there's a lot of opportunities that we're doing this. On a state level, the way we're encapsulating that is that CalCASA and CPDV, working with the California Department of Public Health, have been coordinating our prevention efforts and being able to work together to be able to get in line of how we will be able to have our efforts complement each other. And so in my handout, which looks like, got all the change sheets, so which looks like this, you'll see a link to our prevention plan. We would have a prevention plan that looks like this. And so those are just some documents that you can be able to get, and they'll also be available on the website. So it's a great way that we're trying to be able to consider how we're going to build the prevention capacity within the state of California. Every rape crisis center in California gets funding that actually comes from VAWA that goes to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that's called the Rape Prevention, that goes to the California Department of Public Health, that goes to each rape crisis center in California, that's called Rape Prevention Education Funding. And this, many of the centers are really focusing on working with teens, so the teen dating violence becomes a crucial piece of this. Peace Over Violence would be an example of an organization that does this. And then what we do at CalCASA with our partners at the California Partnership and California Department of Public Health is that we then try to be able to provide training and support to help people doing that. One example of what we've been doing in California for the last 5 years is the My Strength campaign, which is a campaign adopting My Strength is Not for Hurting out of Men Can Stop Rape's work in Washington, D.C. We adopted it for California, and James had an opportunity a couple weeks ago to spend a week up in Sacramento getting some really intensive training on how to be able to lead My Strength groups. And it's a way that we're working to engage men, once again, another one of the trends that we're seeing in the federal funding that came from the leadership from the field to be able to move forward. So that's number one. My second message I want to talk about in teenage violence is that when we're thinking about it, I come from a prevention perspective, and there are important services that we need to have. We also need to be able to find a way to solve this problem. And the way to be able to do this is that we have to be able to think creatively about not just about how we're going to educate teens about this issue. We can't educate domestic violence and dating violence and sexual assault away. Education is part of it, but we have to talk about how we're going to create change in our community. And so we actually have someone from New York here who's partly in California, and Peace Over Violence is also part of the Start Strong Initiative, which is an initiative funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which is an exciting effort, and what they're doing is a really comprehensive teen dating violence prevention piece. What's exciting about it is not, in my opinion, the use of their classroom presentation. What's exciting about it is how they're having youth take leadership and take role to be able to shape how they are going to transform their culture and our culture to create change. And we can't get trapped on the perfect curriculum that works in Iowa. I love the example someone gave earlier. And then say it's going to work, or in our case, it's actually from North Carolina, that it's supposed to work everywhere. To be able to now...
That
was an accurate description. But we want to be able... And not that that's something we shouldn't be doing, but the way that change is going to happen is by creating culture change. That's what I'm excited about. And Peace Over Violence certainly has taken a powerful lead in the work. We had the ECLA Women's Center here earlier doing some fabulous work working with families and engaging men, working with the Latino community, really exciting work. And what we're trying to do with My Strengths are ways to capture ways to work with men differently. So those are some of my observations. So I have probably time for a comment or two.
Yeah,
and then
I'm
running.
Have at him before I leave.
Yes.
As a former high school teacher at Marshall High School, where a lot of this was the genesis, it worked, and I got to tell you that I should be from Show Me State instead of California. What's the Show Me State?
Missouri.
I should be from Missouri, because if it doesn't work in the classroom and if it doesn't work with the kids and create that culture change, then don't even bother me with it as a classroom. The other thing is that's going on in education that you probably know about is this thing called RTR, Responsive Instruction Intervention and Positive Behavior Support. These are all educational initiatives that allow these kinds of programs to be fit in to the school day because it's going to be required and it's going to be measured. And one of the stuff coming out of D.C. right now is they want to show culture change and they want to use research-based strategies, which I think are better than research-based programs. Youth leadership, I got to tell you, is the most powerful thing I've ever experienced working with teens in my life. They can do it. They will do it. You give them the opportunity to do it and the right message, and they are better than any of us on our best day in changing culture in the school. So I just got to, what you have done, all of you together collectively, is amazing because I've seen the proof of it in schools and in Los Angeles, and that I can just speak for LA. So I just
want to
say, I'm here.
Thank you. Well, thank you all.
So, thank you.
And you can stick around a while. All right. So we're going to go back to the beginning. We don't have to do a quick overview on teen dating violence, but we really want to talk about the community level. So Emily and Jane are going to, you can stand up.
We can take turns. I'm going to introduce Jane. I'm Emily. I'm the director of quality here, and I'm very committed to ending teen dating violence and prevention models, and that's what I specialize in here at Teen Over Violence. I brought James on the panel today because the proof is in the pudding. He is a product of our youth leadership work, and now he's an employee of Peace Over Violence, and he's now teaching our youth. I'm the middle school. I love it. So I want him to be able to share his experience with you, and I want to send a couple of take-home messages to you and your organization. I think it's critical to get young, fresh blood involved in your work. If you have turnover, staff turnover, consider someone with passion and gumption, but maybe not the 15 years in the violence against women movement. You know, consider bringing in some new people and consider engaging them, because there's no way I can command the kind of respect and communication that the men's group get. And the same for our girls' group, Be Strong. When a girl facilitator becomes a mentor to these young women, they are sharing all aspects of their life. And with teen dating violence, because you're dealing with youth, it's a critical time of development for all different types of things. There's sexual orientation, there's different experiences, there's thinking about your future, there's community violence. All these things come together, and you need to have a program that doesn't just focus on relationship violence, but is inclusive of youth perspective and experience. And you can't get that if you're sitting in a room kind of making it up at your computer. You have to engage the youth to help you create it. So that's all I'm going to say, because I want James to kind of tell you a little bit about this story and about what prevention has meant for you, the prevention work you've done with youth over violence. Cha-ching.
Extract that information and they use it on in life later on. So I'm thinking, you know, if you get them in middle school, it's a better chance that they'll actually get that, absorb that information and use it in their adulthood and later on in life, and they can teach other people. So not only you get one person, you get three, and then that three people can spread around.
And that actually highlights one of the national trends we're seeing is that the focus is starting to look younger, looking at middle school aged youth, and that's what Start Strong programs are focused on as their target audience, and then using older youth to educate and reach out to these younger youth because they become mentors to high schoolers, become mentors to middle schoolers. Great job.
I know I don't really need. I'll speak loud enough.
Right,
I don't
right.
need.
Right.
I don't need it to be like.
Everybody introduces themselves. If you're in the movement, you can't wait for your turn. You have to take your power.
My name is Michelle, and I work at Jewish Women International. And I just wanted to talk about kind of the holistic approach that we need to take in terms of teen dating violence. And really looking outside of the box at non-traditional partners. So it could be youth-serving organizations. It could be counselors in the school system. It could be engaging with men's organizations and community leaders, but also a positive partner could be the faith community. And as a faith organization, we strongly believe that there is an opportunity with teens to access the faith community, to bring them in as a partner, and to look at ways to build those relationships. And that when you're thinking about teens, but also in domestic violence in general, you know, women and girls, and they're going to their faith community as a first entry point, as someone to talk to that they feel comfortable and safe talking about these issues. And the same thing is true for teens. They're going to go to their youth group, or they're going to go to their, you know, after-school program that's located in you know, some faith organization outside of this school and outside of the social politics and the cliques. And that feels like a comfortable community to be talking about these issues. So we need to really be looking at all of those different entry points and talking about ways to prevent and respond and address violence in those avenues. And one of the programs that we launched last year was with United Synagogue Youth, and it was Love Your Neighbor, Love Yourself. And it was a program talking about healthy relationships in that exact environment, thinking that if you're, you know, talking about it in schools and you're talking about it in youth groups, then you're going to have a better chance of actually engaging these teens and being able to break the cycle of violence, but also have these teens be positive bystanders, and so that they can make sure that their friends are not these types of relationships. And an interesting comment that I heard about the teen dating violence hotline was that a lot of the young people calling in were calling about their friends and then having their friends call back with them to have a conversation about what is dating violence? Is the kind of relationship I am in considered relationship abuse? Is sexual coercion part of dating violence? So it's clear that youth are the best advocates for themselves and for their friends, and that we need to be engaging them. And it's really about changing social norms. And we have this perfect teaching storm with all these different communities and partners willing to come to the table and willing to work together to reshape how our societies use things. And it really starts at bringing everyone to the table and training them and educating them, but looking for each of their strengths and how are we going to bring them together and have that collaborative response. So, that's all I have.
Great.
Yay.
Okay.
In California?
Okay. You are going to give us a state perspective, but right now it's free greeting.
Okay.
That's right. Take care of yourself.
Right, whatever I want, right? How many of you work on dating violence issues currently? Okay. So how many of you work for domestic violence organizations? Sexual assault? Okay, more DV. And how many of you care passionately about ending teen dating violence?
All of us. Just
like
come on.
Because why you're here, right?
100%. We just took a survey.
I think that this is today. Was a really inspiring morning, really talking about linking the local work to the national work and how important your voice and your participation and our collective voice and our collective advocacy can lead to significant changes at the federal level, at the societal level, and how phenomenal that is. And that's really it's been really inspiring to me to participate in this, and I hope that it has been for you as well. And I work for the State Domestic Violence Coalition, the California Partnership to End Domestic Violence, and we all know that teen dating violence isn't new, right? I mean, I know that because I know people whose mothers, you know, people my age, whose mothers were in abusive teen relationships, you know, and I know that I was trained in peace over violence's curriculum back in 1993.
Yeah.
In touch with teens, right? So what is it that has helped to carry this issue from something that people were in denial about to where we are today, where it's, of course, you know, quote-unquote, being recognized as an emerging issue with greater attention, and that is our advocacy, you know, how we come together in our local communities to say, it's not enough, like David was saying, for me as an educator to run around and try to talk to as many youth as possible, and that somehow I'm going to get to all of them and, you know, make sure that they're going to have a healthy nonviolent relationship. It's really about the ways that we advocate, you know, in addition to the education work that we do, where we say, hey, you know what, this is important. And, you know, I just say, you know, our population is growing. Violence is happening. I mean, just if you look at the fact that our population is growing and violence is transmitted intergenerationally, there is no way that we're ever going to have enough services to support all of the victims and survivors in getting safety. Like, we have to be doing prevention. We just absolutely have to. And there's all kinds of arguments. There's cost-benefit arguments. There's all kinds of arguments that we can make. But we need to be advocating for prevention of teen dating violence. And I understand that prevention and healing go hand in hand, because violence is intergenerational, so you have to deal with the violence that's already perpetrated, been perpetrated. You have to deal with the impact of trauma, of witnessing violence, of being victims of violence, even as a middle schooler. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you really, really want to get to hooked before they've been exposed to violence, you have to do it before they are conceived. So really, it's about how we're supporting people who've been affected by violence and how we're also trying to support people in having healthy, nonviolent, respectful, equitable, non-coercive relationships, and how we're advocating to do that. And where sort of my pitch to you all is that, how many folks are members of our state coalition and helping partnership in this violence? Okay, all right, a couple. Great, thank you. So,
are
you
giving one away?
We encourage you to become members if you're not, or if you're not members, to at least participate in as many processes as possible.
You have an alert thing we can sign up.
Absolutely,
handout
that I gave, that my handout is sort of looks like this, and there's a link to where you can sign up for our digest, and it talks about different resources and opportunities. But, you know, we are only as powerful as the folks who we represent, who are telling us that teen dating violence is important and that we should be addressing it. One example of last year, you know, Emily is an active member of our coalition, and teen dating violence has been recognized as an emerging issue within the coalition, and we advocated within our regional groups to say, hey, we need to be taking leadership at the policy level, at the state level, to address this. And unfortunately, our members recognized that, but didn't sort of give us the full go-ahead to prioritize leadership on teen dating violence. So without our, you know, sort of taking proactive leadership, a bill was introduced, SB 1300, that turned out to be not a good thing for teen dating violence prevention education in schools. We ended up opposing it. But what I'd like to say to you all is we can either address teen dating violence at the state level proactively and take strong leadership in that, or we can do it reactively. And, you know, and that's never a good thing, to be trying to lead reactively. And so this issue is a big issue. We've already heard from legislators that there's interest in doing more bills in the next session. So I just want to encourage you to sign up for our digest to be able to participate. You know, and I know it's tough to be doing work at the local level, at the state level, and at the federal level, and that's basically what this forum has been about, you know, asking you to do. But it's how we have the greatest impact, when we can link our efforts and we can come, you know, find that place where there is a collective agenda and we can advocate together and use that collective voice. So I guess that's mostly what I want to say. So please remember me. Please engage with the coalition, either as members or non-members, and let's use our collective voice at the state level to do what we really care passionately about, and that is to support people in having healthy, nonviolent relationships and really stemming the tide of this violence and changing the future that, and creating the future that we want.
Yay. Any questions for Diane to get asked?
In 1991, I signed on to get the Rump Against Women Act passed, and I thought it would either take 20 years or 20 minutes. And in the early days, there was a church lady, there was a Methodist church man, the Anti-Family Coalition Against Domestic Violence, the woman took a 3-hour car and metro trip down. It was me and my intern from that. And so it was very lonely. Now, we have the numbers, but we still haven't figured out the formula. And people get tired of hearing me say this, we haven't really succeeded. We went from, when I started, we had $15 million for all of the violence programs. And now, over 6 years, we got $4 billion. Well, whoop-de-doo. The ads on TV, the songs on TV, and now I'm a former lobbyist, and now we're still criticizing Eminem. We're still having TV shows that every day I wake up. We still have a sense of ownership that not just men, or it's men and women, have it over someone and their ability to coerce it. So we have to start early, and we have to start often. And that's why Teensy actually is too late. But we're gonna start though where it is, where we have a captive audience. Right, and that's what we have in the middle schools and the high school. We start with James's of the world. I'm 68. He's in his 20s. He wins. They listen to him. We want the people that are twittering and tweeting. Not me. I still want to have a dial telephone. But my phone rings, and I thought, whose phone was that? Where is that? I never turned it off. But the point is so even if I saw some of you, teen dating violence isn't on your screen. Well, I've got to borrow my son's iPad. Pull it over. I was so excited. I could pull it over.
Expand it,
yeah. So go like this. Pull it over on your top 10 list and blow it up. Because this is the only way we're going to do it. And we face right-wing opposition. Anybody unmarried that we deal with and try to talk about having sexual or interpersonal relationships, they're miserable, so that we've lost about a third of the Congress there. And then we've dealt with a whole bunch of other people who think that anybody under 18 has no business interfering, and that's between them and their parents. We go, excuse me, if there was something going on good with them and their parents, we wouldn't need all these programs. And then there's the other group that are me, they're going, it's too late when they're in their teens. I mean, we need to start. So I just wanted you have all of our email addresses that were up here. Join every group you can. If you can't afford the dues, if you're already, you know, bringing in pens from the drugstore so that you have a pen at work, which I did for years and now, at least sign up for their email alerts, pass them on. Take from them unmercifully. So take the Family Violence Prevention Funds and break the cycle and NCADB and CalCASA and the Cal Partnership. Take everything you get at Jewish Women International, cut and paste. If you want to, say thanks to Jewish Women International. But that would be nice.
That'd be great.
But we would rather have you completely cut and paste and put it out there than to not. And use it, because I think it's our, you have a friend here who's running the re-election, but Barbara Boxer was in the House and is one of the mothers, an unsung mother. But the boys took it away from her because the boys were chair of the committee. So John Conyers and Chuck Schumer were the head of the judiciary and the subcommittee chair. And Barbara Boxer, she was also wearing right or left field of, you know, not being on any committees for years. The women got, I don't know, decorating or something, that whatever, agriculture, somebody from a really big
metropolitan area got that interior degree. But now we have her, and she's one of our good friends. And so for, at the state, we need to meet with her when she comes back and send her back to D.C. as a born-again and reborn senator who makes everything you Silver Bell is doing in the House, she takes it up in the Senate. Because most of the bills we're working on, the House is real good. And then we're on our knees. We have Sally and I have scabs of being on our knees begging. Because without Joe Biden, there really aren't a lot of friends in the Senate. They, champion, we have friends. Oh, I'll vote for it. But we need our champions. And so my last thing is this, is you have it right in your state, Barbara Boxer. All right, so here we go. Everybody ready? Anybody exhausted? Yes, you have to raise your hand. If you aren't exhausted, you haven't worked hard enough.
Just a quick comment because of the education. Some of the things aren't, they don't say domestic violence prevention or PDA, but if you look at any of the social-emotional programs, social-emotional learning that's taught in school, really advocate for those because those develop empathy as the core. And we know that that is the core issue around anything for violence prevention. So we use something called Second Step in our school. And it's across the United States, and there's other programs like that. So please, make sure that...
Trick people into dealing with the coercion and the physical and emotional violence and bullying by doing really
second
having
step.
Empathy.
It's a very safe way. It's called Second Step, and if you look at it, especially in middle school, it's based on brain research and all kinds of things, but it's done in a way that puts the message out. Like, look at it, it's committee
so
for children.
We maybe need to
you
get
may
that out
find
there.
Some
right.
other way if you're in a really conservative area and they say Second Step is good, but domestic violence is bad.
Right. All right.
There's know your options. Just wait to slide.
And then all of you who were children, have children, no children, I have grandchildren. If you raise them by teaching rewards and consequences.
And modeling.
That's right. And so you model nonviolence. But you reward them for their healthy relationship. What we haven't figured out are the consequences short of, legs, shackles, or jail. And so what we need are our religious leaders, our teachers, our parents. We need them and our peers. So that literally when you're on a team or you're at the youth group or in the band, instead of the band going yay when they find out you made it with what's their name, even if you had to be a little rough, they indeed see it as not healthy and you have some censure and some consequences. But that's the hardest thing to ask young kids to do, as you know. So just remember, rewards, modeling, and consequences. So we'll carry around M&Ms, and for every day somebody goes without getting one more M&M. It's as simple as that. As sophisticated as we are, rewards and modeling and consequences. And so we have to get more friends joining us in both the rewards and the consequences. And you're great.
Second step.
Second step.
Yeah. And
right, Sally, you want to make sure, go ahead.
Just a concrete example of that. We fund four communities to do primary prevention work, and one of our communities exactly had that. They're in a rural community, said, no, we're not going to do teen dating violence work, but they got to the school doing Second Step and Steps to Respect, and they did that for several years, built up their credibility, built up that sort of trust that they were working in partnership with the schools. The schools actually invited them to help them rewrite their bullying policy for their school district. So they basically are writing it for the school. And now they said, now let's talk about gender and gender inequality and sexual orientation and these other issues. And they've gotten funding to do gender-based violence prevention after 5 or 6 years of doing the bullying prevention. So
it changes the teacher too, because you can't teach that and not model it. It just becomes, I'm sure that you understand all this, is that if a teacher stands up in front of you and doesn't model the behavior, then you have no credibility. So it actually changes the teacher in the classroom and the relationship with the kids. So this is an education point. Well, I was just going
to
say,
right? I know. Yay!
I
really give us a hand, first of all. I'll give all of you.
I hope the folks found this useful somewhat. At least hopefully there was one speaker you responded to that got some new information from. You'll get every information by email, and please look for announcements on calls we want to do around bowel reoptimization. We want ideas from LA about what needs to change in federal law, and you have experts here to talk with afterwards. Feel free to stick around for a few minutes and keep talking.